Okay, let's dive into this.
Right.
Picture this, maybe it's a, you know, regular Tuesday night.
Hmm.
Homework's mostly done, dinner is over, and then bam.
Seemingly out of nowhere.
Exactly. Your 10-year-old just, well, erupts. Tears, frustration. Maybe a full-on meltdown. If you're a parent, you know, navigating this tween stage, these moments, they can feel pretty bewildering.
They really can. And what's interesting is that while these outbursts feel so disruptive, they often show us some, well, really significant developmental shifts happening just under the surface for a 10-year-old.
That's exactly it. And that's what we're digging into today. We're looking at insights from Davenport Psychology and particularly drawing on the work of Dr. Carrie Downs, a licensed psychologist who really specializes in child development.
Yeah, she has a lot of great insights in this area.
So yeah, our goal today is really to break down the key stuff to help you understand the why behind these, you know, emotional storms and give you some practical ways to handle them effectively.
Without needing a PhD yourself.
Right, exactly. We'll touch on, you know, brain development stuff, some self-regulation techniques you can actually use, and also how to spot when maybe getting some professional guidance, perhaps from someone like Dr. Downs, might be a good idea.
That's right. It's really about getting a clearer picture of what's driving these behaviors, so you can respond in a way that's, well, more tuned in to what your child actually needs, more supportive, ultimately.
Okay, so where do we even begin with what's going on inside them at this age? 10 feels like a real turning point, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It really is. What's fascinating is you've got this mix of physical, emotional, and cognitive changes all happening at once.
It sounds like a lot.
It is. At 10, kids are really pushing for independence, figuring out who they are. Think about it. Social stuff gets more complicated. School pressures increase. Their bodies are still changing.
It's like they're trying to steer a ship in a storm while still learning the controls.
That's a perfect way to put it. Yeah. They want more autonomy, but their skills for managing emotions still developing.
So their brains are literally catching up.
Pretty much. At 10, those connections between the thinking part of the brain, the prefrontal cortex that's for rational thought, impulse control, and the emotional center, the amygdala, well, those pathways are still maturing.
Ah. Okay.
So that neurological lag, as you might call it, can sometimes mean intense feelings just bypass the logical filter. And that can lead to what looks like a, you know, really huge reaction to something seemingly small.
That makes a lot of sense, actually. So keeping that brain development in mind, what kind of things usually trigger these explosions in a 10-year-old? What are the common pressure points?
Well, drawing from the work at Davenport Psychology and likely Dr. Down's clinical experience, overstimulation is a big one.
Overstimulation, like too much noise.
Yeah, exactly. Too much noise, too much activity, even just intense visual stuff, like from screens. It can just overwhelm their sensory systems, which are still, you know, figuring things out. Think about how even we as adults can feel frazzled in a really loud, busy place.
Right, like trying to focus at a theme park or something. It's just a bit much.
Exactly. Transitions are another biggie.
Oh, changes in routine.
Yes. Unexpected changes, sudden shifts in plans.
Yeah.
That can be really tough for a 10-year-old.
Yeah.
They often really thrive on knowing what's coming next. Predictability gives them security.
Okay, so overstimulation, transitions, what else?
Frustration, definitely. Difficulty with a task like homework or not getting something they want, that can spiral quickly. And simple fatigue. Never underestimate fatigue.
Yeah, a tired kid is different.
Absolutely. They just don't have the emotional bandwidth to cope with stress when they're exhausted.
So knowing these triggers, it means we can potentially maybe prevent some of these meltdowns before they start.
That's the idea. Being proactive. Maybe you dim the lights, give a 5-minute warning before switching activities, make sure they're getting enough sleep. And even when an outburst does happen, if you have an idea of the trigger, you can respond with a bit more empathy. Right.
Right. More understanding. Now, something else Davenport Psychology highlights, and I imagine Dr. Downs really emphasizes this, is the difference between a tantrum and a meltdown. It's not just semantics, is it?
No, not at all. And it's super important because how you respond should be different.
Okay. Break that down for us. Tantrum versus meltdown.
Okay. So a tantrum typically is often seen as goal-oriented. The child usually knows what's going on around them, and the behavior is kind of aimed at getting something, a toy, attention, avoiding bedtime, whatever.
Right, like the classic supermarket floor routine that stops the second they get the candy bar.
Precisely. They might even, you know, glance up to see if you're watching or adjust the intensity based on your reaction.
Okay, so that's a tantrum. What about a meltdown?
A meltdown is generally understood as a reaction to being completely overwhelmed. It's not strategic, it's a loss of behavioral control because their system is overloaded, sensory overload, emotional distress, just pure exhaustion.
So they're not really in control?
Often, no. Their awareness of what's happening around them might be really diminished. They genuinely can't regulate themselves in that moment.
So if it's a real meltdown, it's not like they're trying to give us a hard time.
That's a really key insight from the resources, like those at Davenport Psychology. Meltdowns aren't manipulation. They're a sign of distress. And knowing that difference totally changes how you should approach it, doesn't it?
It really does. You wouldn't handle a genuine loss of control the same way you'd handle, well, strategic button pushing.
Exactly.
Okay, so faced with a meltdown, the advice is nearly always the parent needs to stay calm, which sounds great in theory.
Definitely easier said than done, but it's so fundamental for de-escalation. Your calm actually acts like an anchor for your child when they're feeling completely adrift.
Okay, so how do we stay calm? Give us some practical things, drawing on what experts like Dr. Down suggest.
Okay, simple stuff first. Deep breathing. Seriously, just a few slow, deep breaths can help calm your own nervous system down so you can think more clearly.
Okay, breathing. Got it.
Then there's a mental trick. Reframing. Instead of thinking, he's giving me such a hard time, try switching it to, wow, he's having such a hard time.
Oh, I like that. Shifts the perspective.
It fosters empathy, right?
Yeah.
Changes your whole response. Progressive muscle relaxation can help two consciously tensing and releasing muscle groups to get rid of that physical stress.
Like clenching your fists and then letting go.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or your shoulders, your jaw. And mindfulness, just trying to focus on the present moment for a few seconds, noticing your breath or what's around you without judging it. It helps ground you.
So these aren't just about managing our stress. They directly help us help our child.
Precisely. When you're regulated, you're in a much, much better position to offer that calm support your child needs to kind of ride out the storm and find their footing again.
Makes sense. Okay, so beyond those in-the-moment strategies, what about the bigger picture? What longer-term things do experts like Dr. Downs recommend for creating a more supportive home environment? I always hear about routines and communication.
Yeah, consistency is huge. Regular routines for meals, homework, bedtime. That predictability provides a real sense of security for kids this age.
Less guesswork for them.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It reduces anxiety, which often lowers the chance of outbursts. And visual schedules can be amazing tools here.
Like a chart on the wall.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Show them what's happening now, what's coming next. It makes transitions much smoother because they can see it laid out.
Okay, routines, visuals. Mm. What about how we actually talk to them, especially when things are tense?
Communication techniques are vital. Using I statements is a good one. I feel frustrated when there's yelling. Instead of, you need to stop yelling, it's less blaming.
Right. Focuses on your feeling, not their action.
Exactly. Asking open-ended questions, too.
Yeah.
Not just, are you mad, but maybe, what's making things feel so tough right now? It encourages them to actually talk about what's underneath.
Getting them to open up.
Yeah. And active listening is part of that. Really giving them your full attention, showing you understand or are trying to, and resisting that urge to jump in immediately with solutions. Just listen first.
That's hard sometimes. We want to fix it.
It is hard. But feeling heard is powerful. And keeping language simple and clear, especially when they're upset, because their ability to process complex stuff goes down when emotions are high.
And validating their feelings, right. Even if the behavior isn't okay.
Absolutely crucial. Saying something like, I can see you're really angry right now, or it sounds like that was really disappointing. It doesn't mean you agree with, say, throwing something, but it acknowledges the feeling is real and valid.
Okay, so you validate the emotion.
But you don't have to validate the behavior that came with it. As Dr. Downs and her colleagues would likely stress, you can say, I understand you're mad we can't have more screen time while still holding the boundary about screen limits.
Okay, that distinction is important. Let's talk more about that encouraging the good stuff and setting limits. Positive reinforcement and boundaries. How do they fit in?
Positive reinforcement is, well, really powerful for shaping behavior. When you catch your child handling a tough situation well, maybe using their words instead of yelling, pointing it out specifically, wow, I saw you were getting frustrated, but you took a deep breath. That was great self-control. That really encourages them to do it again.
So praising the effort.
Yes. And being consistent with that praise is key. And then boundaries provide the other side of that coin, the structure.
The lines they can't cross.
Right. Clear, consistent boundaries about what's not acceptable. Maybe yelling, hitting, throwing things, and what the consequence will be if that boundary is crossed, like maybe losing a privilege for a short time.
And consistency is the magic word there too, isn't it?
Absolutely paramount. If the boundary is sometimes enforced and sometimes not, it just creates confusion and often leads to more testing of that limit.
Gotcha. Now, the guidance from Davenport Psychology also mentions lifestyle factors. It feels like sometimes we focus so much on the outburst itself, we forget the backdrop.
It's so easy to do, but yes, the backdrop is incredibly important. A child's overall well-being deeply impacts their emotional regulation. Sleep is probably number one.
Oh, yeah. Lack of sleep changes everything.
Drastically increases irritability, lowers their frustration tolerance. Then there's nutrition. A balanced diet supports stable moods. Physical activity, huge stress reliever, mood booster.
Gets those wiggles out.
Exactly. And screen time. That's a big one these days. Too much can lead to restlessness, trouble focusing, more emotional reactivity. Setting clear limits is really important.
And even school stress.
Yeah. Academic pressures can pile up, helping them manage their workload, encouraging breaks, making sure they have downtime. It all contributes to their emotional state.
So it really is a whole child approach, not just managing the meltdowns, but supporting their overall well-being.
That's it, exactly. These lifestyle factors build the foundation for resilience.
Okay, so we know occasional outbursts are, well, kind of normal for this age. But when should parents start thinking, maybe this is more than typical ups and downs? What are the signs, according to experts like Dr. Downs, that professional support might be needed?
Right. It's about frequency and intensity mostly.
Yeah.
If the outbursts are happening very often, are incredibly intense, last for a really long time, or seem way out of proportion to whatever triggered them, that's a flag.
Okay.
Also, if the outbursts are seriously getting in the way of daily life, causing major problems at school, with friends, disrupting family routines consistently, that's another indicator.
And any safety concerns.
Absolutely. Yeah. Anytime a child is harming themselves or others during an outburst, that warrants professional attention immediately.
And reaching out for help, say, to a child psychologist at a place like Davenport Psychology, that's not failure, right?
Not even close. It's actually a really proactive and loving step. Professionals like Dr. Downs have the tools to do proper evaluations, figure out what's really going on, and suggest specific strategies, maybe therapy, maybe behavior plans, support for the parents, too.
It's about getting the right tools for the job.
Exactly. For both you and your child.
Okay, one last really important piece that often comes up is, well, us. Parental well-being and how we model dealing with emotions.
Hugely important. You can't pour from an empty cup, right? Taking care of yourself, sleep, food, exercise, doing things you enjoy isn't selfish. It's essential for having the patience and energy to respond effectively to your child.
It helps us stay regulated.
Yes. And kids learn so much just by watching us. How do we handle frustration? Do we yell or do we take a breath and talk it through? When we manage our own stress in healthy ways, use coping skills, work through problems constructively, that's maybe the most powerful lesson in emotional regulation we can give them.
Actions speak louder than words.
Definitely. They're watching how we navigate our big feelings.
Yeah. Okay, let's maybe touch on some immediate de-escalation things too. Before a full meltdown hits, are there things we can do?
Yes. Sometimes you can see it building. Distraction can work, especially if they're younger tens, shifting their attention quickly to something else, using a very calm, soothing tone of voice yourself.
Lowering the temperature.
Exactly. And again, validating feelings without judgment. Wow, that looks really frustrating. Just acknowledging it can sometimes stop the escalation.
And what about those calm down spaces I hear about?
Oh, they can be fantastic. Basically, a designated spot in the house, not for punishment, that's key, but a safe, comfy space where a child can choose to go when they feel overwhelmed.
Like a little retreat?
Yeah, maybe with some soft pillows, a blanket, some fidget toys, drawing supplies, whatever feels calming to that child. It gives them a tool and a place for self-regulation.
That sounds really positive. So looking long term then, beyond just managing outbursts, how do we help them build that emotional intelligence so they get better at handling this stuff themselves over time?
That's the ultimate goal, isn't it? It involves a few things. Helping them build an emotional vocabulary, teaching them words for different feelings beyond just mad or sad.
Like frustrated, disappointed, anxious.
Precisely. Developing empathy is huge too. Helping them understand how others might feel. Talking about characters in books or movies, modeling empathy ourselves.
Seeing things from another's perspective.
Yeah. Encouraging problem solving when they face challenges, rather than just swooping in to fix it, asking, okay, that's tough, what could we try? And promoting adaptability, helping them learn to cope with changes or things not going exactly as planned.
It sounds like a marathon, not a sprint.
It absolutely is. Building emotional intelligence takes time, patience, and lots of practice. There will be bumps along the way.
Okay, so just to kind of wrap things up, it feels like the big takeaways are really understanding where they're at developmentally, that 10-year-old brain.
Knowing the difference between a tantrum and a meltdown.
Prioritizing our own calm, using those consistent routines and clear communication.
Positive reinforcement. Firm but fair boundaries.
Paying attention to sleep, diet, all those lifestyle things.
Knowing when it might be time to seek professional help, like from the team at Davenport Psychology.
And remembering how much they learn from watching us manage our own emotions.
Exactly. It's about empathy, understanding, and consistent strategies. And for anyone listening who wants to dive deeper, the Davenport Psychology website, drawing on expertise like Dr. Carrie Downs, is a great resource. They have specific guides, like the one on coping with emotional outbursts in 10-year-olds.
Definitely worth checking out. So as you think about all this, maybe just reflect on this. Thinking about your own emotional regulation, what's one small, manageable thing you could try this week to better support yourself and your 10-year-old during those inevitable tough moments?
Yeah, it's a process. Every little step helps.